around the network. But we really need to get out of...
Radio station WBAI, this is 99.5 FM, Pacifica Radio, New York City.
So I would encourage all of you to figure out creative ways to not only involve all the individual stations who have fully charged bookkeepers in this process of moving forward, where they can be utilized in addition to the staff in the national office to get on top of the financial situations at the individual stations. I would suggest that the board seriously look at engaging in some sort of national on-air possibly or off-air fund drive to get out of this huge, tremendous debt situation that we're in, so that we're not in a situation where the listeners don't know what their money is being used for. If the listeners know that on the air, what we're doing at this particular time is raising money to get out of this debt, they'll come through for you, even though they don't appreciate where the debt built up. If we are honest with them, and that really is something that we really need to contend with, because the fallout has been tremendous in terms of not only us feeling good as staff going on the air and being able to tell the listeners where their money will end up, but the listeners are really key and essential to rebuilding the network. If there's a national benefit for Pacifica involving artists, performers, people who have voices on the individual stations, I think that we can do something. I mean, that might sound too much like Judy Garland and what's the other guy's name? Ricky Rooney. It might sound too much like that. Let's have a barn dance. But really and truly, we have to do something on a national level, whether it's a combination of seeing if we need to borrow money just to get out of part of this hole so that we don't have to depend so much on moving around the money that's needed at the individual stations. I think it's real important to have a plan. I'm encouraged by the idea that we'll soon have a controller in place for the network. This is very, very important in terms of moving the finances forward. I'm also encouraged by the fact that there will be, I believe, better communication between the national office and the individual stations in times of crisis, where if money is needed elsewhere, the stations will be informed of that need. There will be a direct communication between people in the finance office and the general managers, from what I understand, where we will be told that we need to borrow $80,000 from your account to meet this need right now. We can't tell you the exact date that you'll be repaid, but there will be a plan developed to repay the stations for monies that have been borrowed from them. I think that's also really essential for all of you to figure out. Is a plan to actually not only get out of this debt, but to figure out how to repay the individual stations for all of the monies that have been taken from them. I can see by the nodding of heads that maybe my time is pretty much up at this particular point. But I want to thank you and encourage you, as I always have, to, if you have any questions about things that are going on at KPFA, or any, if you want to pick my brain about a lot of stuff, there's a lot of stuff floating up there that I'd love to share with you. So feel free to call me at any time as board members, and I'll try to answer your questions as quickly and honestly as I can.
Okay, can we just hear, thank you, Jim Watts. Can we just hear from Curtis Gray? I believe that Sherry Gendelman, who is the chair of the lab, is not here this weekend, and Curtis Gray from the lab has been asked to make some comments on behalf of the lab. And then we will have time for some questions of Jim and or Curtis and raise concerns. So again, because people with the equipment, move aside so we can see. Okay, Curtis?
Okay, hi, I'm Kurt Gray, and I was recently elected as a listener representative to the KPFA Local Advisory Board. That was our second election. I got to give a little bit of history, but mostly it's a report, and I'll try to be very brief. Basically, following the principle of whose station, our station. At the time of the lockout in 1999, the listeners started asking some really basic questions, like, how did all this come about, and why didn't we know about it, and Why don't we have any power to influence what's going on? Why don't we have a vote? We're the ones to pay for it, some of us for decades. And proceeding from that came the elections of the local board. Some of us have been calling for elections of the local board by the staff and the subscribers for many years. It suddenly became the obvious idea for many, many of the listeners after the lockout. We are now have had our second election. And as you know, the election process is part of the settlement. So that was a major victory for the listeners, not just in Northern California, but for the subscribers and listeners all over Pacifica. The system we use out there is proportional representation. I'm not going to give a big explanation, but what it does do is it allows a very low threshold. We have a large board, 21 members. A third of them are staff, paid and unpaid, of course. It allows a relatively low threshold to get elected, so you have a diversity of opinion. You have a diversity from the geographical area. We also have in place structures to guarantee gender equity, to guarantee that you're going to have the ethnic diversity that Northern California and more and more the United States and certainly New York has on that board. If the proportional representation rules do not get there, we've got other rules in place to make sure it happens. What we've been engaged in since we've had the first elected board, we've done community needs assessment. The board has gone out into the community and the communities all over the listening area asking the listeners what do they want from the station. We've also gotten seats on the program council for listeners and for the local board members. The program council went through a transformation after the lockout. For the first time, staff and unpaid staff were able to elect representatives to the program council. The majority of the program council are not department heads or management. They are now staff, unpaid staff, and listeners. What the board is going to be getting to is the peaceful transformation of KPFA to deal with the underlying issues that allowed Pacifica to make these sort of moves. We are going to restore and expand the diversity of programmers, of programming aimed at diverse communities that was lost with the purges in 1995. People need to understand the major event in Pacifica history was the reprogramming of most of the stations in the mid-90s to get rid of the activists and the programmers of color. Okay? In the mid-90s, that's when it happened. Nobody was telling you, most of you didn't know. Those things happened under Pat Scott and Jack O'Dell. Okay? We're almost done. I personally am hoping that the local advisory boards are going to become local governing boards. We are going to be investigating new media technologies, the web, digital FM, satellite radio, new ways to carry the Pacifica message. That's what an elected local board does for you.
And one person signed up for comment from the Berkeley area, Barbara Lubin.
Well, you know, I signed up because we were told that we needed to have some more people from this Northern California. It's not really Berkeley. It is Northern California, which includes San Francisco, Sonoma County, Marin County, and Central California, the Central Valley. Feeds the world, you know, at least our country. And I just also want to reiterate the history in Berkeley. Each of us has our own history. I particularly came involved at KPFA many years ago when I started the Middle East Children's Alliance. KPFA was the only station anywhere in Northern California, and I think in many areas in this country, that would allow the discussion of Palestine, an open, frank discussion to be had. It was the only place who allowed me on the air and to speak about this. I would like to say that we have gone through a lot. We were arrested, many of us. 12,000 to 15,000 of us came and demonstrated to let us back in, to reopen our station. As I said before, I just want to reiterate, please, rehire Larry Bensky. And I did only for a minute say something about moving the station. And I know that there are people on the board who feel that the station, the business office should not come back to Berkeley. And I just, the history of that is that it started in Berkeley. It has always been in Berkeley. It is a Northern California corporation. And that's where it has to come. And that has always been a demand for these last 3 years in this particular part of this battle. When Pacifica came at 2 o'clock in the morning with a Mayflower moving van and in the dark of night stole the business office and took it to D.C. For that reason alone, it should come back to where it belongs. So I encourage you to take this step and to move it back. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
All of you.
What I'd like to do is move on to the other stations, hear all the information, and then we can ask questions and have comments, if that's okay.
I just have one question.
Yes.
This is a standard question I'm going to ask. Of all the stations.
Get closer to the mic.
Jim, this is a standard question, and I just want everybody to be able to hear the answer to this question. Jim, do you fully and faithfully pledge to carry out all the directives of this National Board of Directors? Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Okay, but can I just suggest that I don't think we need to do that. I think we need to assume that we need to work out our relationship.
WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Listener sponsored, commercial free radio.
Okay.
Madam Chairperson,
yes.
Last night you indicated that when station managers gave their report, we had an opportunity to discuss the financial transactional relationships during this period. I'd like to do that now and ask Jim, how does it work now and what he would recommend?
Okay, might I suggest let's do that because there was some discussion about this yesterday. You might have missed part of that. I don't remember when you came in. I think there was some confusion about this and it may still remain. So, Jim, could you possibly speak to what happened with the budget and how it got off track and some of these financial questions?
When you say what happened to the budgets, I'm not sure what you mean.
I'm not sure either.
I don't need that answer. What I would like to do is figure out, in terms of fund drives, where the money goes, if it goes centrally, does it stay there, what percentage, and also what you would recommend for the future if you don't like the process we have now.
Yeah, I think that my own personal recommendation about what needs to happen. Currently, KPFT is the only station in the network that has its own operating account, although we did reopen this account at KPFA and with negotiation after there was some miscommunication with the national office, we were able to work that out. But I do believe that all of the stations need to have at least a partial operating account to pay for some of the immediate bills that are out there in the individual station areas. There are times when it's very imperative for the bureaucracy not to hold up payment on certain things that need to be paid so that they don't develop into an emergency situation where we're about to be cut off the air because our utility bills aren't being paid and things of that nature. So it would be, I think that if there is a way that in combination with increased reporting to the national office, as there used to be when there were accounts set up around the network, that a regular schedule for payment can be set up with the national office and a system for reporting to the controller once that person is hired is very imperative, not only to help us get out of this huge debt that we're in, but to also get out of this kind of crisis financial management that we're in. We really need all the people power throughout the network of people that are financially qualified to do this kind of work in closer collaboration with the national office.
If there's a revenue shortfall and you have to cut your budget, who now decides what part of the budget to cut and not cut?
Well, how it's worked in the past is that the chief financial officer of the organization has worked with the general managers and the business managers at the individual stations to discuss whether they actually what their actual surplus is or shortfall if they have that. And then ultimately the general manager would decide if where he or she would need to cut their own individual budget.
Does that happen this year, though? I mean, you're not telling us what's going on now.
Right now it's not going on because we're at this point just getting the financial information from last year. We do know that at several of the stations there were surpluses at the there should have been surpluses at the end of the year based on the revenue and income and the way in which the stations had their finances set up in terms of not going over their budget. So, but we know that those surpluses are all gone now because of this financial crisis. So, but generally speaking, that's how it works. There's a communication between the general manager, the finance office, sometimes, and also the executive director in terms of working the budget for a current year and making adjustments either up or down.
Okay. Thank you. If I could ask the indulgence of the board and the people here, if we could just have a slight alteration in our agenda. One of the congresspeople from Brooklyn, from New York City, has just joined us, and I believe he wanted to address us for a few minutes. So we could just, we know the pressures on members of Congress, we could just hear a few words from Representative Major Owen.
I think that a lot has happened since I was cut off the station. I do want you to know I'm very disturbed by what I hear in terms of an attempt to drive a wedge between blacks and whites in this fight. I think the first time you invited me to testify, I said to you that at the funeral of Samori Marksman, who was from Brooklyn, and who had introduced me to the station, had me out a few times, and I knew him very well, at his funeral at St. John's Vine, when I saw the gathering of people there, it was the power of the diversity. It was the diversity in the groups in terms of income and race and people from all walks of life that was most impressive. And as a politician, I said, this is the kind of power that somebody will seek to sabotage. The power of diversity in New York City. We have very strong institutions of various religions and various races and various groupings separate. The problem of New York City is that the things that should bring us together and things we need to come together to fight on are not able to pull us together. And in the absence of diverse groups acting in unison, that keeps us in a situation where the greatest city in the world is really run by a bunch of power mongers who don't care about most of the population. So divide and conquer has been the way it's gone for all these years. We were happy to get involved at the Progressive Caucus level to try to bring some light in the situation and to try to go back to the original purpose and mission of Pacifica Radio. It was quite impressive, and we felt that if you went back to the original purpose and mission, then the kind of thing that was happening here at WDIA would not happen. We also proposed some compromises in terms of proposing that WDIA be treated as an autonomous republic. You can have diversity within your own Pacifica federal structure and allow WDIA to move a certain way. I also said that past weaknesses of WDAI divisions within the station have led people to conclude that they had an opportunity to take over, and we had to take care of those. I compared the situation to college universities and said that the producers ought to be seen as professors with tenure, the power of decision making first ought to reside with those producers with long term tenure here, and you can start from that point to develop a structure that will be more solid and impervious from attack in the future. A lot of things have happened that I have not been up to kept up to date on so much. I don't know the details of the court case, et cetera, but I do think that the spirit of fighting has been clear here in New York City. The spirit radiates throughout all the communities. Folks who got up early this morning came over to call, may be one-sided here in terms of race or gender or something, but I assure you the diversity that supports this station is magnificent. It's here in New York. There's an opportunity here at no other place. And as one answer to what happened on September 11th, as one answer to those people in the world who said our democracy is decadent and doomed, we ought to support an institution of this kind and uphold its long tradition in the city of including the most diverse population possible, not only the running and management stations, but of course out there among the listeners and the programming. Everything here speaks to what America really should be all about. And we are one of the few places where this is treated in mass media. The voice of diversity, the voices of progressivism, those voices are muted in media in America. And here you have an opportunity to have diversity and the voice of progressivism put forth in a forceful way, supported by the people. I hope that the powerful decision makers here will take all this into consideration and use your knowledge and experience and your wisdom about the power of compromise and the necessity for compromise in order for the world to move forward in this situation. Let's go forward with the compromise we can all live with and restore the grandeur and greatness of the BNI. Thank you very much.
Moments here with us, and we appreciate the station managers and the lab chairs, you know, giving us a few minutes to let him speak to us. So if we could go back to the agenda, Marion, did you want to?
Yes, I'd like to just indicate to the audience and to those who are listening that we were very impressed with the work that the listeners were doing in Northern California, so much so in terms of the lab reform. We put it in as part of our settlement agreement. We'd like the other labs, the other listener-sponsored areas to use that as a model for their organizations. So I want to commend Curtis and others for how you've done it. Very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so let's move on. The next station is KPRU Houston Station. I don't know if everybody's aware that last week, I don't remember now if it was Wednesday or Thursday, last week, Garland Ganter, the station manager, informed our interim executive director, Joanne Meredith, who then informed me, that that he was resigning. And he resigned effective as of yesterday. The interim executive director, the acting executive director in Washington, in consultation with me and with folks in Houston, determined that she thought the best way to handle the situation for the short term, the immediate, was to ask the chief engineer at the station, Steve Blackwell, to step in as the interim general manager, so that there would be time to set up a process to solicit resumes and interview people, to involve the staff and the community in Houston in the selection of a permanent general manager. And that is underway. So obviously, because all this just happened literally right before this meeting this weekend, Garland Ganter obviously did not come to this weekend, and the new interim general manager could not make it up on such short notice. In addition, I got an email from Susan Darrow, who is the chair of the LAB. I believe on Thursday she sent me an email saying that she was unable also to attend this weekend's meetings. You know, again, we invited all the lab chairs to be here or to send a representative. She was not able to be here, nor somebody else. So we don't at this moment have a report to hear from either a manager or a lab chair. There are a few community people from Houston who are here, who signed up, so we'd like to spend a few minutes just hearing their comments also. There's three people who signed up. Deb Afto is first. Again, when you get to the mic, if you could just say your name clearly so that the coordinator gets it all correct.
Madam Chairperson, didn't we hear earlier that the lab had reorganized itself?
Well, I think we're going to hear some comments here and then a little bit.
Okay,
we'll get to this.
Good morning. My name is Deb Afto. We have an emergency situation in Houston. We've had a desperate situation for a very long time. Garland Ganter appointed his own lab, and he appointed his friends, people who had no knowledge of radio. They were not activists in any shape or form, and they took little interest in the performance of the station. It's been a desperate situation for us. The activists in the community were literally shut out. It has made a unique situation in that the almost total loss of access to the station has made people very much aware and very much appreciative of how important that access is. And we have been able to overcome our smaller differences on whether it should be voted on this way or that way to form a committee that has met regularly for over 2 years. We had hoped from the very beginning our aim was to diversify our board and the people who are going to be making decisions for our station, and we have done that. We have a diversified group, not as much as we would like, but we have actively solicited the different communities in our very culturally diverse city. We have actively solicited their input and their membership and their participation in every aspect of everything that we have done. We now, because of the vacuum created, we now need the board's help. We are there. We are ready. The other night we had a meeting that over 60 people attended who were of all nationalities, colors, both sexes, and some programmers, some just interested listeners, and we are all in agreement. We need help to get our representation, to be the representatives, to take our position on the board so that we can move this station forward. The current lab has been unable to make a decision that wasn't engineered by Garland. We had a meeting where Garland didn't show up. The board was there, and they did not have the agenda, so they did not know how to proceed. This is definitely a case of the tail wagging the dog, and we need to rectify that. We need to get going on it, and we cannot leave this vacuum. We cannot let this excited energy about the changes in Pacifica just dwindle and fall by the wayside. We are asking your help. You have a copy of a resolution, I believe, and Dan's going to speak next on that.
Okay, Dan.
Hello, Dan Jones. I just want to give some information that Deb omitted, and Deb is the chairman of the KPFC Interim Local Advisory Board, and I'm the secretary. And what I'd like to tell you guys today is that we have been trying for a very long time to get the board to address the situation. Nearly a year ago, we sent a detailed list to the old board and to Pacifica management of all the violations of the Ganter Board, of federal law, of Pacifica bylaws, and of community participation. This is a board that has 6 members currently. This is a board that does not give public notice of its meetings. They cancel its meetings an hour before they're supposed to be held. This is a board that is not representative of Houston. This is a board that does not do any work. This is a board that does not feel sufficiently for its duties that it would dare show up at one of these meetings. You haven't seen any members, with the exception of Teresa Allen, from that board at any Pacifica National Board meeting.
Right.
And in the last year, we have sent that, and we send it every couple of months. We send it again, and we send it again, and we get no response. And we have approached many members of this current board.
You're tuned to WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York City at 99.5 FM. You're listening to the meeting of the interim Pacifica National Board.
We ask this board to consider this question and come to some sort of resolution on how to get the LAD back in compliance. And their response was, I'll paraphrase, we've got other more important things to do. Listener empowerment is a very important thing. Community involvement is a very important thing. We, once we were no longer able to attend LAB meetings because they weren't being held, we did the best we could to have an open community process to elect an interim local advisory board. And the word is on interim. We fully share the goals of this board to get to widespread participation in a democratically elected local advisory board within 1 year. And we felt so strongly about it that we set as our goal, 1 year from the day we founded the interim board, to dissolve the board if this had not happened. Since the settlement, we have come to members of this board asking you to resolve this question. And I have to say, once again, what we've heard, wait, we have other things on our agenda, and what I'm saying to you is you can't wait. We have a station right now that is in transition. It's wonderful news. We can help this network begin to discover how to do transitions at all of the stations, but we can only do that if we're allowed to participate. I'm going to turn the microphone over now to Greg Yzma, and he's going to present a resolution that we would like the board to consider to vote on before the end of this meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, other members of the board, ladies and gentlemen.
Excuse me. If anything, it's Madam Chairwoman. But aside from that, Leslie does it fine.
Leslie, I stand corrected, and thank you for doing that. Look over here on the wall, and the wall behind me. The signs say, Godfrey, Shove, and Hankins must go. What's not on that sign? There you go. Garland Dancer's name is not on that sign, and why? The reason it's not on that sign is that the listeners in Houston, acting through the interim board, exerted sufficient pressure for Garland to resign. And that's what this is all about. That's why Deb Chapter, the chairman of the interim lab, and Dan Jones, the secretary, are here today, and that's why I'm here, and the other dozen or so people from Houston. Now, we've got a resolution to run through. There are 5 points that I want you to consider. How we did. There's been a lot of objections to what we did for procedural reasons. We used as our model, KPFA. We kept in mind the ideas of reasonableness, good faith, transparency, precedence. Everybody is focused on precedent. It is my position that if the labs in the other cities, New York, L.A., Washington, ever behave like a reactionary lab in Houston, they would deserve to be deposed and set aside. And that is our position. But it doesn't matter, because the reactionary lab in Houston has only got 5 or 6 people on any given day and hasn't met 4 out of the last 6 months. So it's sort of a moot point. Now to the resolution. I'm not going to read all of it because it's somewhat long and partially legalistic, but I'm going to read what we asked the board. I'm going to read what we've asked the board to do. The non-compliant LAD is dissolved. The interim LAD is recognized and seated for the period which the LAD imposed upon itself, in this case 1 year, in which after it's dissolved, it will be dissolved unless specifically continued by the action of the board, and that these measures are effective immediately. And copies of the full resolution are circulating in the hall, and each board member has one. But in essence, what we're saying is, as Dan said, well, the situation in Houston, a reactionary manager, a reactionary lab. The listeners got together and said, how are we going to solve this? Rethinkers in the audience, Sammy Crane and David Littleton, take notes. Reasonableness, good faith, transparency, precedence, and it now exists. Simple legal concept. Race gets a locator. The situation speaks for itself. All we're asking is that you endorse what we did because it was done in good faith.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Who has signed up? Did you want to make a brief comment?
Yes, sir.
Okay, very, very brief, okay?
Hi, my name is Hep Ingham. I'm from Houston. And first of all, I thank Dennis for giving me a few tips on street activism that came in pretty handy. But, you know, regardless of how you decide on this last thing, it's imperative that we have general manager who replaces Brightwell. It comes from our ranks. We've been kicked out of the station for too long. And let me give you a quick story that we had at the meeting the other night. A black female programmer was kicked off in 95 and made a statement on air that the Houston School District wasn't maintaining its inner city schools enough, and Gantt told her that it was being too left wing, and it kicked her off. This is what we've been dealing with since he came on, since he became the manager. So it's imperative that we get somebody an activist rank in the station as soon as possible so we can affect the change that need to occur there, and we can move this station back to being a voice of the voiceless, start representing these communities that haven't been heard from in about 12 years.
Charles Spooner wanted to comment on this.
Yeah, I do. I've been very concerned about the Houston situation and the LAB in Houston ever since I learned that they have five or six members when Pacifica policies require in our policies that labs have a minimum of 12 and a maximum of 24 members. So it's clear to me the Houston lab has been out of compliance with our policies no matter what. In addition, as I've learned, that they don't hold public meetings, that they're not doing any work, that they're not doing community needs assessments, that when a meeting is called, if Garland Ganter doesn't show up with the agenda, they adjourn the meeting. That's contrary to the requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting that authorizes and that requires each of our five stations to have what they call a community advisory board that is independent of the station, that sets its own agenda and determines on its own how it will inquire into the service of the needs of the community. The CPB, in setting these up, intended that management didn't control them so that they could get real honest feedback and information from the community. So it's clear to me the Houston lab is out of compliance. The question is, what can we do about this? I am aware that in 1995 and in 1992, former boards of directors that didn't like their labs dissolved them. This happened to, or froze them. This happened to the Los Angeles lab, as Dave Adelson has told us all the story many times. It also happened to the Washington, D.C. lab. I think the precedent of this board of directors attempting to direct a lab as to who its members should be and is something that disturbs and worries me a lot. I don't think this board of directors should select the members of any lab. I've been trying, as I've heard from people from Houston over the last months, to figure out what can be done. We all were aware, as I was at least informed, and from being in Houston and talking to people there,
at Houston meetings and members actually of their lab that the lab members previously were appointed by Garland, the station manager, or chosen by him. That's not Pacifica's policies and procedures documents forbid that. It requires the lab to elect its own members, and in KPFA land, we require our listeners and staff to elect them. So I'm wondering if we couldn't have some. We now have an interim general manager while we're going to be looking for a new general manager for KPFT. And I'm wondering if this board couldn't adopt a resolution that didn't dissolve the lab. I'm not sure we have the right to do that. I'm concerned about it. But some kind of a resolution that would require the Houston lab to come into compliance with our policies, that they must bring their numbers up to the minimum, at least, of 12 members, and that they must bring onto their lab people from the community willing to serve and assist during this transition period. And I'm open for suggestions or comments about that, but it's clear this lab has completely failed, it's not doing its job, and it doesn't meet our minimum requirements.
I'd like to call on Teresa Allen, if I could, who is from Houston and actually is both on the lab and on the iLab, so, and on the board, obviously. So I want to call on Teresa, if that's okay.
Before I speak, if anyone has any questions, you might want to pose those questions, and then I can respond to those questions. You look like you were about to have a question, propose a question.
No, I was going to ask the chairperson to ask George and Teresa to give us some comments on it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. I'm very conflicted about this. How many of our local advisory boards can meet in the station? Can the Washington, D.C. LAB meet in the station?
No.
That's a problem.
Neither can
WBAI?
I know.
Okay, fine. Well, I thought that we could meet in the station until I went to the station and was arrested. I just approached the local advisory board chair and I said, well, why are we having meetings in the Doubletree? She said, well, it's just so convenient and everyone knows where it is. And I said, the reason people know where it is because you're telling them that's where the meetings are held. So we have some pretty dire circumstances here, and I appreciate Major Owens mentioning that one can, it's important that we note that people are out to sabotage diversity. We have a 6-member local advisory board. We have, with extreme difficulty, selected a secretary other than the station manager. With extreme difficulty, selected a vice chair. And when I propose that we have a nominating committee, they said, well, why do we need one? Although I was showing them the policies and guidelines for local advisory boards. And then the station manager proposed that he talk to Ken Ford as to whether we would have permission to have a nominating committee. That's what we're facing. We have very little community needs assessment or ascertainment. When I first came on, I said, what do we do? What does the local advisory board do? We do ascertainment. I said, what is ascertainment? And they said, well, you know, we ask people when they pledge, you know, ascertainment questions. We, you know, which I guess is another word for community needs assessment. I said, what are those questions that we ask? Because when I'm calling in and pledging, they're not asking these questions. Well, we ask if they're renewing members. Who here thinks that is community needs assessment? And then we did a survey, and I was told that just really wasn't relevant. We have no program council with repeated attempts to start the process of having a program council so we can discuss community needs, public affairs, because as you know, on KPFT is the sound of Texas. So it seems to have gone in the direction of music. And I have been told by one of them, we say we have 4 to 6 members. I'm not sure if one of our 6 members has resigned. He's told me he's resigned from the board, but I'm not sure which board he's resigned from. And he told me he wants no communication with me, so I can't find out. I have not gotten any response from the chair. Whoa. So that's where I am, and there's a much bigger picture. So I definitely think that we need a local advisory board that is compliant. We happen to have an interim local advisory board. Oh, let me just fill you in. Our July meeting was canceled at the last minute, and because I didn't check my home recorder during the day, I was not aware that it had been canceled. So I went to the DoubleTree, and there was no one else in the local advisory board or staff there. The August meeting, after the meeting, we had an executive session in which I thought we were going to discuss a candidate for the local advisory board, and the decision was made that our local advisory board cannot really conduct business in front of the public. So we're going to have minimum number of meetings, which means like once every 4 months or once every 3 months, the minimum for the next year. The November meeting lasted 2 minutes because the station manager was called away on a family emergency. And I think maybe we might be scheduled to have a meeting in March. I don't think it's on the website, so we're not sure when they're going to meet again. Just thought I'd fill you in. So that's where we are. And there is an interim local advisory board group. They have, to the best of their ability, elected diverse members. They are open to nominations. They have 21 members, and they're trying to conduct business. And I'm on that interim local advisory board. So, George, would you like to say anything?
Yeah, let me answer.
Yes, please. I'm hearing what you're saying, Carol, about your concern about having the local advisory board jump to the dictates of this board. It seems to me that we can keep we can accomplish our lower goals if we merge these two labs, merge the lab and iLab. Is we need to have community-based progressive radio back in Houston. It's too late. It's time to do that now.
I have a resolution, but it does not include a merger. So I could read this, and I don't know whether you want to discuss or what.
I asked George a question. What does he mean by merge? How would it work?
I'm not quite sure myself. I mean, putting the two together and... And then we would have one. Sir?
Okay, so we have Jabari.
To what?
These issues about LEBs are vital. These issues about LEB are vital, and I want to come out of this board meeting with some clear direction on what the board wants to happen. Personally, I believe that any entity that isn't acting under fully understood and described policies should not be considered to be part of the legally standing entity under the Pacifica Foundation. Clear and simple. If it's generally understood and noted that the existing so-called LAB never has been, and has never shown any inclination to be in compliance with the policies of Pacifica, then they should not have legitimate standing to do anything in the name of Pacifica. Clear and simple. I think in this situation in Houston, where you have a resigned general manager and that position has to be filled, that the easiest and simple thing for us as a board to direct and set clear policy is that the incoming general manager of that station be directed through clear policies that we will establish to work with the community in Houston to set up a legally constituted LAB under the direction and oversight of this board, and that they do all the micro organizing, but that when they create whatever they create, they present that to the board and we examine it to make sure that it is in compliance with the policies that the foundation sets forth for the establishment of LAB. That's what I want to see done.
Madam Chair, I need a, I guess it should be a report of information. With regards to the, what Sister Spooner said about the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, it's my understanding also that under those guidelines that we are not supposed to be on both the board, this board, that is the interim PNB board, and also the lab board at the same time. We're precluded because of that. So I'm kind of curious to find out if in fact we can, and certainly we should have some influence on the local boards. But I guess I would have to say that based on my understanding, we shouldn't be on both boards. And they should be autonomous in terms of the way they construct their membership. So perhaps someone can address that for me.
I think both Carol and David want to address that. So, Carol.
The CPB regulations require that the community advisory boards have no authority over the day-to-day management or operations of the station. And about 3 years ago, in 1999, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting sent Lynn Chadwick a letter saying, we think that having a lab member on the national board might violate that concern of ours. And without questioning or probing further into that, our lab members did resign from the national board. However, because the national board does not engage in the day-to-day operations or management of the local stations, and isn't supposed to, we're supposed to work through an executive director, and that's the part, we don't manage these stations, and we certainly should not. We're a board of directors working on policy. I think, and several lawyers that I've spoken to have said, well, there's been no ruling of the FCC about this. That letter could certainly, the opinion of Dick Madden could and perhaps should have been challenged. There has been no case law on the matter. And so unless and until the Corporation for Public Broadcasting wants to tell us directly, you can't serve on both boards because somehow or another, as a lab member serving on a board of directors, you're engaged in day-to-day operations and management, which we're not. I think they're misinterpreting their rules.
Okay, David.
Yes.
No, David. Yes.
Thank you. David Pertig from the KPFK Local Advisory Board and the National Board. The letter from the CPB indicated that the National Board not be comprised of a majority of Local Advisory Board members. But furthermore, and thus there's no issue here relative to any problems in terms of the requirements under 47 U.S.C. 396 sub K of the Federal Communications Act. However,
point of information, please.
However,
I don't have that document before me, so I can't.
Okay.
Please break it down.
Well, I mean,
you're an attorney, and I.
Also, I'd like to keep us focused on the Houston issue that has been presented to the board that we need to speak to and act on.
Right. Yeah. My point is this, merely this, that the letter from the CPB, which indeed was not challenged or analyzed as far as I could tell, or perhaps even read by many, did indicate that it was only a prohibition relative to there being a majority of local advisory board members on the national board, because thereby, arguably, a, quote, LAB, unquote, might then be exercising operational controls. However, I would dispute that as well, because no one LAB would have such predominance over the board. Therefore, no single LAB would be exercising such operational control over a given station. Having said all that, again, there is no conflict relative to that. And I apologize, I didn't mean to be pulling the lawyer's trick of rattling off sites. But just for the record, I wanted that on there.
Okay, I just want to really get us back to the Houston situation. It seems we have a very, very, very pressing issue there, and one that we need to resolve. My understanding is that this board, the national board, does not have the authority to say who can or cannot be on a local advisory board. We should not have that authority. What I do think, my understanding also is that when the labs were dissolved, and Carol before mentioned that one of the problems of the old national board was that it took a prerogative it didn't have and was and dissolved boards. In the past, local advisory boards. My understanding is that those boards that were dissolved they were compliant. They were not out of compliance. They were fully compliant, and that was part of the abuse of the old board, was dissolving local advisory boards that were compliant. We now have a situation where I think it's no one is disputing that the current LAB with five or six, we're not sure, members, is and has been for quite some time out of compliance. So we're dealing with a different situation. We're not asking this national board to take action against a compliant board. We're being asked by folks in Houston to take action to rectify a situation where the lab is not in compliance. One possibility I want to suggest is that, and I think Teresa also has a suggestion to offer, but let me just put this out and see how it matches with what you're saying, is that we ask, because again, we do not have the power to appoint, that we ask the what has been described as the interim lab, and this goes to George's point, to merge with the five or six people on the present lab to constitute themselves as one new lab. But that would be the sentiment and the interest and the desires. I'm not sure that we can actually direct that to happen, but that's the interest that we think would be best served to the Houston community by this national board. That would be the perspective that we would bring to Houston, that we think that would best serve the station and the listening community in Houston to merge those labs to form a new one.
And
Rob has his hand up.
My understanding of what you said, I just want to be clear, is that if you've got two groups that agree that they want to be the lab, and they're looking like the lab, and acting like the lab, and quacking like the lab, that they ought to be able to get together and vote and say, we are the lab, and at that point they become the lab, and we're certainly not going to tell them that they're not. Is that what we're saying?
Yes. That is the thrust of my proposal. Teresa had her hand up about another
Madam Chair. I'm not sure if you want this terminology with the suggested merging, but I was going to make a resolution. Be it resolved that whereas the Houston LAB has 4 to 6 members currently and through a pattern of behavior repeatedly violates the Pacifica mission statement, the PNB directs the interim general manager to require the lab to bring their numbers into compliance with the Pacifica policies, 2, to meet immediately and regularly, and to 3, bring the people in the community who are interested in sending the station, in serving the station through this transition. And okay, that's my resolution. And I'm wondering if perhaps we should put something with a suggestion that they merge with the what is known as the iLab. I don't know whether you want to add to that. So that's my motion.
Okay, so the motion has been made. Do we have a second for that motion?
I
Okay, George and Jabari both seconded. So if you were to speak to the motion, James, Marion, David, and Pete.
Leslie.
Thank you.
There is a leadership of that board presently, and they aren't represented here. And while I can appreciate the motion of Sister Allen from Houston, I'm concerned that, one, there will be no input from the present chair of that board, however we perceive it, and two,